Blog Talk Radio.
FOE.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev,
yo,
Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B Boss, and the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hours show to keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Greetings, War Room Nation. Welcome back to the best roundtable in sports. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports, the company that's revolutionizing the revolution in sports media. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined by Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, Akil Bayon, and Paul Johnson, the generals. We got a great show for you today. In about 30 minutes, we'll be talking to Spike Eskin of CBSPhilly.com and 94WIP in Philly to discuss the state of Philly sports, most notably the 76ers. Near the top of the hour, we'll discuss street cred and ghetto culture in sports with Shadow League and Slam Magazine editor Khalid Salam. So go ahead and join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join these conversations. Call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. But before we get into today's rundown, we'd like to shout out the team. The future of sports talk radio has arrived, so be sure to listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also, catch Mojo and the crew of the Season Ticket on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio as well. Finally, catch Brandon and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at ueradiolive.com. But don't worry, you can't catch them live. You can hear and watch all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays at newvibradio.com, 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. But right now, you know what time it is. It is time for the birthdays.
My birthday! Yay!
Back at the table, fellas. Back at the table.
Good, y'all.
How goes it?
Ain't gonna hurt nobody. I just came to talk sports. Ain't gonna talk nobody.
Oh, my bad.
Unless you a hater. All right, but anyway, the birthdays, of course, are brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, you better go get it now and start paying for it. Go to our website at warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order yourself a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have DirecTV, and you got to listen to the War Room. Our first birthday is one, Mr. Richard Scott Prohl, a.k.a. Ricky Prohl, turns 45 today.
Yay!
B. Austin, what do you think of when you think of Richard Scott Prohl?
Hands. Hands, hands. My man didn't drop nothing. Now, granted, they didn't throw much to him his way, but the ones that got thrown his way, he was not letting them go. He had no speed, no athleticism, but somehow he was able to always get open with nice route running, and he didn't have to be but so open because the hands was phenomenal. Ricky Prohl had major hands.
Bayon, Doc Bay, what do you remember about Ricky Prohl?
And I remember Ricky Prohl being everything that B. Austin said, but he did run a 4.5, but I think it's just different. I think white athletes face discrimination.
What you trying to say, Kerry? He ran a white 4.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think,
is that what you're saying?
What does that even mean? Explain that.
Yeah, I think there's reverse discrimination with white athletes. They can have the same measurables and times as black athletes, but then people just assume that they're slower, less quick. But he ran 4.54. He was faster than Patrick Creighton, but Patrick Creighton looked faster than him.
He ran a Caucus Mountain 4.5. Jimmy, yeah. what do you remember about Ricky Prohl?
I used to think that Ricky Prohl was a beneficiary of playing with the Rams team, but when you think about it,
in big games, he had like a lot of big moments. Because I remember in the NFC Championship game when they played the Bucks, he had like one of his best games. He had like a bunch of catches for over 100 yards and scored a touchdown. Remember that game? I think it was a dumb score, like 11-6, when nobody was scoring. But Ricky Pro had a great game.
Oh, you're talking about in that championship game, you said?
Yeah. He had like his best game in that game. And then,
that's why they ain't score. Ricky Pro having his best game, they ain't going to score no points.
Yo, even the game that they lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, where they could have won that other Super Bowl, he balled out in the Super Bowl. And
the crazy part is,
on the low, he had a, like, okay career. And he didn't blow any record books away or anything, but he played in the NFL for about 17 years.
Yeah. That was the next point I was going to make. He had longevity in the league. So, he was a very, longevity, because he was a very, very solid receiver. Like I said, numbers do not blow you away whatsoever, but it says something for him to always make a team.
Always have a job.
And for him to always, have some type of contribution. He was a smart receiver. He was heady.
Scrappy. You and Kill, yo.
Scrappy. He was scrappy.
He was real scrappy.
He was scrappy and heady.
He ran precise routes.
Bro, no doubt.
You and Kill,
he was a cerebral player.
All right, so our next birthday is one Mr. Joseph Christopher Carter, a.k.a. Joe Carter, turns 53 today. Jimmy, what do you remember about Joe Carter?
What I remember about Joe Carter, I don't want to remember. Yo, F Joe Carter, F his birthday. Yo, that's all I got to say.
Yo, it's funny that you said that, because I was going to say the exact same thing, but even though you said it, I'm still going to say it. Man, Joe Carter. Red Austin, man. That's all we got to say, man.
I got nothing to say about Joe Carter.
If y'all don't know why we're saying this, it's because we're all Phillies fans, and of course, in the 1993 World Series, Game 6, Joe Carter hit the walk-off home run to beat our hometown team. So, just like we just said, man, Joe Carter.
Yeah, he probably was nice. He probably had a great career. Probably a good dude. But much like y'all, I'm hoping he gets hit by a bus.
damage is done now, so, I wish he would have got hit by a bus prior to that game. But,
if any of y'all out there ever see Joe Carter, I want y'all to relay a message for me, yo.
I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairclaw. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Praise the Lord. After all that. Bayon, what do you remember about Joe Carter? I'm sure you remember what everybody else does.
Same thing, hitting that home run, and then the Phillies hopes of a World Series. But we're letting Mitch Williams off the hook. I think Mitch Williams is more to blame than Joe Carter, because had Mitch Williams not put the pitch right there, then Joe Carter would have smacked it. So.
You want to boil down to an FM too, yo.
Mitch,
Mitch Williams too. Yeah, so Joe Carter, man, whatever, dude. The next birthday is one Mr. Lynn Curtis Swan. Lynn Swan turned 61 years old today.
Birthday, yay!
Doc Bay, what do you remember about Lynn Swan?
Man, I remember that crazy catch that gets played over like 752,000 times that he made. Playoff or Super Bowl game where he like dove up, and I remember him as an analyst, and I'm sorry, I just think he was overrated. Like, I think he gets more props, kind of like his quarterback Terry Bradshaw, because they won 4 Super Bowls. And so I'll put him as a good to very good receiver, but I think in history people view him as an excellent receiver.
I think it's because he was like a spectacular receiver. He made the jumping catches, the one hand catches, stuff like that. So, that's what a lot of people remember, especially when you speak to people of our generation who really didn't see him play. They see those highlights and you know we live in that sports-centered generation, you see some highlights and you automatically thinking somebody's good and you really didn't even see him play. Not that we're saying that he's not good, just where he probably ranks in the annals of NFL history might be a little too high. Jimmy, what do you think about
Lynch? I look at it a little different because of the time that he played. He didn't play in a pass-happy league today, so his stats would get dwarfed by guys like Ricky Pearl. But at the end of the day, he was one of the better receivers when he did play, ran for governor of Pennsylvania. It's funny when you talk about that Steelers team, because I've heard almost every player on the team be called overrated, which is funny considering they won 4 Super Bowls. I've heard Bradshaw's overrated. I've heard Mean Joe Green's overrated. I've heard Jack Lynch overrated.
I've never heard that.
Overrated. Listen, man.
Yeah, I've never
heard
the Mean Joe, but I heard a lot of the other ones.
Everybody on that team be called overrated, including Joe Green and Jack Lambert, which is funny, but I guess they had a bunch of players who were great players, but, you know, I guess not all-time greats is what people are trying to say, but you got them on one team and they dominated. And right. I just think that as time goes on, people forget how good he is because numbers now are just, like, you know, through the roof.
No doubt.
Jimmy, basically, people are saying that the Steelers teams are the Pistons that won the title. There you go.
Yeah, I guess more or less. Yeah.
Good analogy.
Which actually makes them better.
They ran off four, though.
Yeah, which actually makes them better teams. You know what I mean? People don't realize that. But, Austin, what do you –
I mean, I'm gonna just stick with the theme here, you know. It is.
I hate you, good brother.
Yeah, I was never impressed by the acrobatics and athleticism. Show me the numbers.
All right. Well, you're impressed by this next guy because it's one of his teammates' birthday as well. Mr. Franco Harris turned 63.
Yes, sir.
Now, what do you think about Franco Harris, the man famous for the immaculate reception?
I'm going to keep it 100 with y'all. It's about to get real funky on here. For those of y'all who don't know, in the 60s, well, the 70s and 80s, Franco Harris was considered a sex symbol by women my mother's age and older. So I had to hear about how fly and how sexy Franco Harris was for my entire childhood growing up. And so essentially what my mom was saying was that she would let my man Franco get the yam farmage on. So that's I mean between her, between Franco, Billy D, and Richard Roundtree, I couldn't live, yo.
I did not need to hear that story, though.
Yeah.
Yo, when I think of Franco Harris, I think of Gabe Kaplan because he looks just like Welcome Back Cotter.
Yeah, he damn sure do.
Yo, also Penn State. And how he came out and defended Joe Pa. He was loyal to Joe Pa to the last day. You know, and of course, those Steelers teams. He's another one of the guys who I've heard, you know, overrated. So, you know.
He's a running back, great? And all you hear about is a catch.
This is true, but that shows you how. I mean, that was a historic moment in football, though. You know what I mean?
Man, historic.
I don't believe it really happened, though, because I never saw footage of him literally catching the ball. Like, you know, never mind. Go ahead, y'all.
Kill, what do you think about Franco?
Everything you guys said, and it seems like he doesn't age. It's like he's
your mom too.
It seems like he looks the same like over the last 40 years.
Yo,
y'all drawing, yo.
It's embarrassing, man. The conversation got to Franco Harris around the dinner table where we was out somewhere, man.
Yeah, I see. So be awesome, probably like smack Franco Harris. All right, so those are the birthdays. Jimmy, let everybody know what happened this week while they were on the grind, getting that money and dodging rain and snow and whatever else happened.
While you're on the grind, it's brought to you by Bay Financial Services. To all you income tax ballers, go to WardenSports.com. Click on the Bay Financial Services logo to get more information about how to protect your assets. With that being said, a couple stories I want to talk about is one. You guys, Lamar Odom, the candy man, he takes a snooze during his custody hearing. Did you guys hear about the story? What's your opinion of Lamar Odom falling asleep during a custody hearing for his child?
Yo, Chuck, it must be on the pipe, right?
I think it got a lot to do with what you just said, man. I mean, you play ball for a living and you eat a lot of candy, so you're on a lot of sugar
he's
high.
Coming down. He's
you know
coming
what
down
happens
off
when you come off that sugar high? It's crazy. His ex his ex-girlfriend, who he's in the custody battle with, she was actually the person who made this public. And the headline kind of blows it up a little more than what it really was. You know, they were kind of on a recess. The lawyers were in the back talking to the judge or doing whatever they do for real back there. He was right outside the courtroom on a bench. But the thing is, he was laying down on the bench. He's 6'10". The bench is like 2 feet smaller than him. So his legs are dangling off, and the guard came over. The security dude came over and told him, yo, you got to get up. So the dude gets up, but he plops his head down in his hands and falls right back asleep while the dude is sitting there talking to him. So, you know, it wasn't like he was in the courtroom listening to the judge speak or listening to the lawyer speak, falling asleep. So she kind of blew that up. But still, guys, wake up.
Yeah, but she, it's one of those situations where you got to understand that she's going to use any – I mean, you guys are in a custody battle. She's going to use anything that she can to make you look bad, so you got to be on your P's and Q's. But I think it was overblown. But it's funny, though, because –
flew across country. This happened in New York.
Yeah, we know about his whole addiction to candy and everything. But, you know, but we know about his addiction, but, yo, he's actually lost a lot of weight recently. He's getting back in game shape. Have you seen him lately? He's been balling. He's been playing pretty well lately.
Is his contract almost up?
Contract.
For his age,
though, Dev, for his age and what people understand about him, it's always a contract year. Ain't nobody going to get that dude no long-term deal.
But he lost about 25 pounds, and he's playing a lot better now, you know.
I ain't going to hold you. Yo, Lamar Odom is one of the more talented dudes to come through the National Basketball Association in the last 15.
That's what's so frustrating, though.
Yo, I can't even front on him. But, like, my man Ghost said when he heard that, you know, he signed that deal with the Cardassians, nah, he ain't from Queens. Don't do that in Queens.
But, yo, to your point, B. Austin, that's what makes it, like, he reminds me of Derek Coleman. Like, these guys have skill sets where they can, they're one of the better skill sets to come across in the league, but I guess it's just something not there from a mental standpoint.
I'm not Lamar Odom.
I'm scared of
Derek Coleman.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is these guys, in terms of the skill set, they're both lefties. They both can do anything on the court. They have size. They can handle the rock. They can shoot. It's just that they don't have, you know, I guess that whatever it is inside of you that makes you want to be great. So let's move on, though. Let's talk about another one of our favorite guys to talk about, and that's one Vince Young.
Talk about them.
Vince Young has written a letter of apology to his former coach, Jeff Fisher. I know you guys have had harsh things to say about Vince Young. What do you think about Vince Young trying to make amends to everybody he did wrong in the past?
I think he's broke. He's trying to get back in.
Desperation makes us swallow our pride and grovel. This is like him groveling in the media. And the funny thing is the BPs are still finding a way to defend this dung stick.
Yo, listen, y'all. I'm gonna read some of the quotes. I'm gonna read some of the quotes because from his apology, and you know, just some more stuff he said in the interview pertaining to Buffalo. Tell me if it sounds to you guys like he's actually taking accountability for some of the
he's
stuff.
Not. He's
listen,
not.
Now this is some of the stuff he said about what he said to Fisher in the letter. He said, I definitely wanted to apologize for the things that I did, letting them know about the frustration, a lot of different things that was going on in my life at the time, and I want him to know that I really did appreciate him trying to make me become one of those type of leaders on the team, a successful quarterback. He said, I'm hoping him the best in his career, and I hope I get the same opportunity to finish my career in the way that I want to finish it. Then they asked him about being released from Buffalo. He said, well, I don't really feel like it was my game. I just really feel like it was one of the off-the-field issues. I really feel like teams don't want their quarterback to be in a position where they're distracted. I was young at the time, and I put my trust in a lot of people. I was getting taken advantage of. Basically, I'm the victim of the situation. Just got to clean up that mess. Just got to let teams know I'm a little bit more mature than I used to be. I've grown a whole lot. First of all, he got cut from Buffalo last year. So you turn, like, you go from being young to mature.
Yo, like as a man, like as a man, yo, you ain't supposed to never say you the victim. Like that's a pause worthy.
Not during apologies or not during something where you're trying to clear up a situation. Even if you feel like you're the victim, if you've been taken advantage of, like a lot of these you know, wealthy athletes are, you don't say that publicly. You know what I'm saying? You deal with that stuff behind closed doors.
Hold on, real quick, though.
He's playing the victim out loud.
Did B. Austin say, you ain't POTUS, say? You
ain't
POTUS. Young, yo.
You ain't POTUS.
He was speaking his language.
I was speaking to Vince. Obviously, Jimmy, since I have to spell it out for you, I have to enunciate and say things in a manner in which it will reach Vince Dunn. He does not speak the King's English. He doesn't understand. You got to, yo,
Brett,
you got to, you know what
Brett,
I mean?
We'll say POTUS. Call him a, B. Austin, did you call him a dungster?
A dung stick. A dookie stick. Like a Bull stick wing. In the woods when a dog takes a doo-doo and it gets stuck on the stick. That's what Vince is.
Dag. But well, do y'all think he'll get another shot? Now, he's working. He's doing a pro day. They say he's been working with a quarterback guru to stay sharp. I don't really know when he was ever sharp. But he's throwing at the University of Texas pro day. So it's like he's swallowing all of his pride, but is it really a thing where he's swallowing his pride, or is he just broke?
No, here's the thing. He's just broke, and with the current trend in the NFL of dumbing down your offenses to double your dollars, I think that there is a place or a fit for him, because as they dumb down the offense and double the ESPN views, I think that you can get him for cheap.
To me, it's like for somebody to just, you know, all of a sudden be all nice and reflective and you know, mature all of a sudden. I don't know about that. To me, it's just a little bit
fishy.
You know what I mean? Like,
basically what you're saying is he looked at his bank account and the checks coming in, looked at his age, and he said, man, this is not going to last me for the rest of my life. I need to get back into the league.
Yeah, that's all I can do. You know what I mean? For some people.
You guys are killing this man. I don't know what his financial situation looks like. But considering the way the league is moving in terms of how the quarterback position is played, Austin, you made the best point outside of all your slander, which is that it could be a place for him in this league. I mean, what you say, to dumb down the offense to double their dollars?
Down the offense to double the dollars.
Listen, man, the DC fans, they still holler. Because
Jimmy,
No, all I was saying is there could be a place for him in this league, considering the way the offenses are playing now. But you know, we spent a lot of time with this guy, especially.
Hold on, one last point, Jimmy. I agree. I think because of the pistol and all the running quarterbacks, Vince Young can probably play another 8 years as a lifetime backup.
I don't think he's athletic enough for the pistol. He can run. You know what I'm saying? But Vince Young is a reactive runner. I don't know if you can go out and call running plays for Vince Young. He's not that fast.
That's
you know
a
what
great
saying?
Point.
I'll tell you one
that's
thing.
I don't really I think he can run the pistol. I think he needs to sharpen up.
Vince Young has a huge fan base, and I guess a lot of that has to do with his college career because people still stick up for this guy. But anyway, another story.
What did Porter do?
The paternity
they're not finna leave. They pulled it dead up. Stood up on
it. Yo, stop, man. Yo, I'm tired of talking about Vince Young. Let's move on. The Michael Jordan paternity suit. I have nothing at all to say because this is just a dumb story. But it's good news. So, B. Austin, go ahead and let us know how you feel about it.
What they're now saying is that the young lady who has lodged the paternity suit, two things. One is aimed at her character. She is a sex therapist and relationship counselor that specializes in teaching women how to sharpen their fellatio skills. That's her job. And then the second thing is
Mike shot the club up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the second thing is that she wrote another man's name on the child's birth certificate. Now, that doesn't mean she can't go after MJ, but it's going to make it very difficult at this stage for her to get him in court since someone else signed as the kid's dad.
Right. Mike's lawyer says that the paternity of the 16-year-old boy had already been conclusively established in the divorce filings between this woman and her ex-husband. But the mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if it's a ploy by her, because she is asking for child support. She is asking that he can change his name legally to Jordan. But, you know, if it is a ploy, you know, she's gotten the kid involved, because this guy is making YouTube videos telling people, I'm his son, and he knows that I've spoken to him about it before. You know, he's just being secretive and this and that. So, you know, if you guys can find that on YouTube, go find it. I'm not giving you links because it's not on our page. But
what color is he?
I can put in all of this, though. I know that the kid's not Mike's because the kid is black. So, do we got anything else to say about this?
Yeah, Mike stopped really messing with black women after 1995.
How many years ago was that? That's more than 16, so it's not possible.
So Mike sought out basically the top fellatio expert in the country,
mm-hmm.
got her number, hooked up with her, possibly impregnated her, and then just moved on.
I've never seen
if she
hooked up with a fellatio expert, I mean, I've never seen how a young woman can have a baby out of her mouth.
Yo, cuz. Jimmy, move us on, man. You're mad.
Yeah, pretty much, yo. That's why I'm just remaining quiet, because anyway. This story here. The female kicker who wanted to try out and play professional football, she basically sucked at the combine.
She frauding.
Before I let you gentlemen talk about it, to me it was like a joke. And considering there are women who would like to play football, this was kind of a setback. Because she did nothing.
Well, yeah, she
tried
to.
The thing is, she tried out to be a kicker, and then she said she messed her quad up. And anyway, go ahead, Dad.
She had never kicked anywhere. You know, they just supposedly gave her a chance because of her athletic background. But this was a regional combine, so this is for all the people who don't get invited to the real combine. And if you get, you know, if you get seen here and they like you, you get invited to the super combine. Bunch of BS. Basically, they let her do it because they didn't want her and women's rights activists to make a big stink about it. But the woman's name is Lauren Silberman. You know, she had her day lasted only two kicks. They lined it up on a tee for her to kick a 60-yard field goal. Listen to this, man. Her first kick went 19 yards. That's not it, man. Her second kick. Well, after the first kick, she grabbed her leg and was trying to act like her quad was hurting. Her second kick went 13 yards. 13 yards. So then she asked for a trainer, you know, had to, you know how you do. You're embarrassed. So you ask for the trainer and you walk off like you're injured. And that's it for her. That's it for her trying to be the first woman in professional football. Let me give you a quote, though. This chick says, you know, the distance wasn't there, but hopefully the scouts will notice my technique. Not always limp. Yeah. Oh, are you serious?
The man's world.
Hey. She said the distance wasn't there.
But it wouldn't be nothing without a cheerleader or a girl.
Yo, all I'm saying is this. David Ager doesn't have a job either. But
and she expected
this
to get one.
I'm not even going to laugh at her because I've tried to kick a field goal before. And I might have made it about 16 yards, but it's definitely not as easy as it looks on TV.
But hold up. That's like saying I'm about to shoot some three-pointers, and I shot a bunch of air balls, and hopefully the scouts like my form and technique.
I don't get it. I don't get how she – I don't understand why she would even say anything like that to be quoted, you know, in real publications. Like, the person – asking her the question should have been like, really? Like, did you just say that? It's weird, man. It's very, very weird. But that's what it is. That's pretty much what we are these days.
Before we bring our guests on, Dev, can you tell everybody how to get in touch with us real fast?
Yes, sir, will do. Y'all know the drill. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about the company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click the memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest articles in the All Fair and Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. You could join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show, especially if you want to, you know, get into the conversation, and if you got any questions or anything you want to say to Spike Eskin when he comes on the line. That's blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get in there, just sign up for a free profile of Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, just sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're there, just click follow so you can get updates and reminders about the show. Y'all know the drill. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Twitter, Facebook, and the chat room. So when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012, you can call in and get yourself heard verbally. Just press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. So, Jimmy.
I'll take it over from here. Okay. All right, well, our guest getting ready to come on is the editor of CBSPhilly.com, CBSPhilly.com Sports, of course, and also he's a member of 94 WIP in Philadelphia. He's the guy I go to talk everything about Sixers as well as all of Philly sports. So for the first time, I'd like to welcome Spike Eskin into the War Room. Spike, you there?
Yeah, I am here.
Hey. Spike.
What's going on?
Man, you guys got your an app and merchandise and that. Damn, you have a whole raptor. You got everything. I don't have merchandise or an
well,
app or anything.
Spike, how else can we beat the four letters?
Come on. Four letters.
you're trying to take them down, huh? And yeah, we're working hard over here. We're working hard.
That's good. That's good.
All right. So, Spike, this is Devin. We're going to start you off because, you know, we basically want to talk about the Sixers because we know that's your quote-unquote expertise. But let's start off with some of your thoughts about the Eagles and their recent moves. You know, new coaching staff, they keep Vic, keep Foles, keep Edwards, and they bring in two more quarterbacks in Dixon and Kenny. Do you have a clue as to the thought process of Chip Kelly at the present moment? Like, what's the plan for the Birds right now?
I mean, my guess would be at least the thought process with the quarterbacks is that he doesn't particularly believe in any of them. So you might as well. I mean, it doesn't hurt them to have them all here, and none of them are none of the contracts are cost prohibitive. Like, you know, the Vic contract they bargain down, and if they decide he can't play, is worth even less. You know, Foles is on a rookie deal. Edwards is Edwards. Dixon, you know, is pretty much nothing. So I think. In light of them not having a guy that they love at quarterback, it just sort of feels like they're bringing in as many guys as they can and see who picks up what he's doing the best and just kind of roll with that this year until they find a guy they really believe in. So, you know, I don't think it doesn't sound like a bad plan to me. I mean, you know, in light of the, you know, I'd rather them do that than give up a great second-round pick for Alex Smith, who I don't think is very good anyway. So instead of overspending for a guy who you don't think is that good, you might as well do this, I guess.
Alex Smith has become very overrated over the last few months because there's nothing else out there. But you're right. You don't want to make moves and grab somebody just because there's nothing else out there. So, I get that.
Alex Smith is getting paid a lot of money, you know, and the thing with the Eagles is they need players. They need so many players, and you go and you if quarterback was the last thing you needed, you know, if it was the last thing you needed, then maybe you take a, and there's nothing else there. Maybe you take a shot on Alex Smith this year, but you know, because the Chiefs are honestly the Chiefs as far as talent goes. Are probably in a better position than the Eagles are before quarterback. Yeah. So, you know, that might have been the last thing they felt like they needed. So in that case, it's probably not a bad deal. But as far as the Eagles go, yeah, and I don't think Alex Smith can play, really. So, well, I mean, like, he's not a
– He's a manager. He's a game manager.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I'm skeptical is the wrong word because I don't think – badly about Chip Kelly or what he's done, but I'm a lot of wait and see over here, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Spike, this is Akil. Great to have you on the show. And I have a question for you. What do you think of the Flyers' chances to contend for the Stanley Cup this season after such a slow start in this shortened season?
Well, I mean, the one thing that I sort of feel like with the Flyers is that, you know, if you got to have one thing that you can lean on. The Flyers got to have one aspect of hockey they can lean on, whether it's defense, whether it's scoring, whether it's goaltending, and they're not really consistent in any one of those aspects of the game. And it doesn't seem like, you know, when I watch them, I don't think this Flyers team really has any identity yet. And they got a lot of young guys, you know, they got a lot of young forwards. They've been hurt by injuries, you know, pretty significantly so far this year. And with so many games in such a short time, when you're trying to get in a rhythm and trying to establish an identity for a team that has a lot of young guys, I think that's tough. As far as whether they can do anything, I honestly don't think anybody knows anything with hockey until the playoffs start. I mean, every year there's a 6 seed, a 7 seed, an 8 seed that seems to go far. I mean, when the Flyers made it to the Cup Finals, they didn't make the playoffs until the last day of the season. So as far as the playoffs, I have no idea. If you're the Flyers, you just want to find a way to get into the playoffs. But
yeah,
you know,
young talent just to see if it'll all pan out.
Yeah, maybe get hot. You know, I mean, who would have guessed the Kings would have won last year, you know? And I would honestly put my – as great as the Blackhawks are playing, like, I would bet against the Blackhawks winning the Cup. The regular season doesn't seem to correlate to the playoffs at all in hockey, you know? So.
Sure, sure. Spike, this is B. Austin. Speaking of our teams, is the Phillies' window closed, or do you think this team can compete with Washington and Atlanta this season for the NL East title, or at the very least a wild card?
Man, it's possible, but the thing that I keep coming back to is that they need so many things to go right that you're not sure about. You know, it's almost every position on the field, there's an if, there's a significant if, you know. Significant if at second base, significant if at first base, at third base, at catcher, in left field, in right field. These are all legitimate things that you're not sure about. Your third starter, if that's Halliday, and your middle relief. So those are all things that you're not sure about going into it. I guess my biggest problem is they have a team that's supposed to be based around pitching, and they've got defense problems sort of all over the field, the whole left side of the field. I mean, no matter, I don't think it's going to end up being rough and left, but if it's rough and left and Michael Young at third base, I just, God forbid somebody hit it to the left side of the field, you know? you know, I think they have, they've to me, they've got 2.5-3 months to show that there's some juice left. And if there isn't, I think you just start seeing what you can get for everybody and getting contracts off the books, and maybe starting to rethink the next couple of years, because you wait too long on guys like Howard or the Lee deal. They become deals that you can't get rid of. That's sort of what the Red Sox did last year. You know, they sort of cut their losses on a couple of bad deals and got rid of a couple of good players just to sort of reset. And I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm not super – it wouldn't shock me, I guess, but I'm not super confident about them this year.
I guess for me – I'm born and bred skeptical, so I'm definitely not.
Yeah. Growing up in Philadelphia, you're skeptical anyway.
Yeah.
For those just tuning in, we're talking to Spike Eskin at CBSPhilly.com, by the way. And Spike, we have a comment from somebody on Twitter, at @RBTS_baseball. He heard what you said about Alex Smith and just said, thanks for pooping on his Chiefs after they made the movie with Alex Smith.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's funny. There's a Chiefs bar in South Philly, and I know the guys there. It's Big Charlie's, and it's like,
yeah.
if you know, here's the thing for the Chiefs. If you know how bad it's been for the Chiefs over the last, you know, decade, then Alex Smith and Andy Reid and what they're about to embark on, whatever it ends up being, is way better than it was the last couple of years. So,
I mean,
you know,
they had guys killing themselves at the facility, so they can't get any worse.
Right. So, you know, if they go and win 9 games this year, that's amazing for them. So I wasn't trying to crap on Alex Smith. I think you're just calling a spade a spade. Yeah, I don't think he's that good. I don't think anybody does. So, you know, he's better than what we have right now. But
absolutely. But you know what? Let's switch our focus totally to the Sixers now. This is your sport. We all know that. But in your opinion, because it's hard to watch this team at times, what is the root of the Sixers' struggle? Is it just Bynum, or is it more to that? What is your opinion?
I think it's hard to put your finger on one thing. Like certainly it starts with Bynum not being there. But what I try to, if you remember the beginning of the year, there was all kinds of excitement from people saying, man, even with Bynum, this is a exciting team, and you know they could at least compete without Bynum. And I think the most disconcerting thing, the biggest dose of reality that you could get is you look around the league, and you look around the league at players, at teams that lost their best player, and that were able to at least keep their heads above water. A lot of times, more. You know, and like you look at the Pacers, lost Danny Granger before the season even started. You look at the Bulls, lost Derrick Rose before the season started. You know, you go through these teams that lose their best players that are still able to keep their heads above water. And this team lost their best player, who incidentally, by the way, has never been the best player on an NBA team. Has never, not once, not, you know, like, has never been the best player, has never been a leader, has never, I mean, I understand why they made the trade, but like, you lost this guy who you don't even know can be the best player on an NBA team. You assume he can, and it gets this bad. Like, it shows a bunch of things. I think it shows that there's a real talent problem, you know, which is fine. It's not like they're locked into a bunch of long-term contracts, but if you have a talent problem and you don't have any – there's not, like, a very good amount of youth on the team. Like, there's not a lot of upside aside from – Drew Holiday. So they're not talented. And they don't have a lot of things to look forward to. And then on top of that, I think the Collins thing has sort of like, you know, everybody, Doug Collins was a great coach to have in here that first year he was here. But like the guys, like I know from guys that I know, that like, The players are over it. They're just over it. And I'm not saying it's right for guys to quit on coaches or to not try, but when you know you're not talented enough and you know you're out on the coach, it's tough to go out there and play. It just is.
Right. Because we're going to get into Doug Collins with you in a second. But with all this being said, you know, we know about the whole Andrew Bynum saga. Is there any reason that this team should, or at least should try, to re-sign Bynum at the end of the season, or with his degenerative knee condition, should they just, like, wipe their hands of it? What's your opinion?
It's like the supposition that people say, well, they should sign him for 2 years and, you know, $8 million a year. Well, okay, that's never going to happen. So once we get, like, the cheap contract idea out of the way, degenerative knees, it only gets worse. So if his knee problem was so bad that he was not able to practice for more than 5 minutes with the team for an entire year, mind you, nothing happened. Like, there was no traumatic injury. He didn't fall down. And he has a knee condition that, by definition, only gets worse. And, like, I can't. Like,
yeah,
what
like
is
the word degenerative scares me. Like,
so by deductive reasoning, we're done here.
Yeah, it just, you know, and it kills me when, and God bless their hearts, but like it kills me when people like, hit me with a question on Twitter or even on the air last night. They're like, all right, assuming Bynum is healthy. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like,
this is crazy.
Yeah, why? Why are you assuming that?
Why are we making that assumption? Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
like,
it's gonna be some team in the league that's gonna sign this guy. Watch, I hope it's
absolutely.
The Sixers, but it just the NBA owners never shocked me. They never shocked me.
Well, but see, let's say you're the Celtics, right? And you have cap space. All right, if you're the Celtics, you've already said to yourself for the next 2 years, and they did it at the trade deadline this year. We're keeping Garnett. We're keeping Pierce. You know, we're just gonna sort of ride this out. And if you're the Celtics, maybe. Knowing that you have this, you're going to try it for 2 more years, you go and you give Bynum 3 years and $36 million, and if he's healthy, he's healthy, and if he's not, he's not, and you took a shot. Like, and you have veterans in there, they're going to keep him in line, and you have, like, you know, there's a culture there that sort of, that does, you know, it doesn't mean he doesn't have to lead, he doesn't have to be the clubhouse leader, he just has to go in there
pressure.
Yeah, and maybe for them, if he plays 50 games, that's fine. But, like, the Sixers need him to play 70 games and need him to be the best player on the court. And I just think that's
ridiculous.
It's crazy. It'll never happen, you know. So,
but Spike, I know that Doug Collins had a bit of a meltdown. We all saw the press conference with the loss last week in Orlando. We've noticed that he's never lasted really more than 3 years in any stop. You know, do you think he's worn out his welcome in the city?
Yeah, I mean, he's worn out his welcome. And it's a little – and look, I wrote a pretty, like, pretty anti-Doug thing a week ago. And I brought up the 3 years thing. And the 3 years thing is a little unfair in that, like, the Chicago thing was not his fault. Like, the Chicago thing was the owner didn't like him. Jerry Krause didn't like him. They rub each other the wrong way. You know, who knows if Doug Collins stays there and maybe, you know, maybe he ends up being the guy with Jordan. But that said, there were two other stops in Detroit and Washington where it happened. And what everybody forgets is that the last 6 weeks, Sixers season, was miserable, and the players were and there were stories coming out that he lost the locker room, and I heard the locker room, and this year I've heard the same thing. And it's not to say that, like, I'm not trying to be negative about Collins when I say it. It's just, it's reality, and it's like, you know, you can't. There are certain coaches like that in every sport, you know, like Mike Keenan's like that in hockey, and you know what, Jim Harbaugh's going to be like that in football, and they're just guys that wear on players, and then it's just, you know, it's a quick burn, and it, you know, they took a shot this year, and maybe if Bynum was healthy, it would be different, but if you're Doug Collins, what do you even want to come back for next year? What does he want to be here for? It seems going to be terrible, you know? I think they got to look each other. I think the whole front office, the whole structure, everything. Rod Thorn, Tony DeLeo, Doug Collins, you know, they bought this team. The new owners bought this team, and they let the people who are already running the team continue to run the team, which is, you know, okay, maybe we don't know much about basketball. We let them take a shot. But the organization is not in any better shape than it was 2 years ago. The talent base is not in any better shape than it was 2 years ago. And the team, under this management, has not won more games than it's lost in any season. They were 500 last year. They were 500 the year before, or game under, and they're going to be under 500 this year. That's not good enough. Everybody's got to go.
Okay, so that's interesting because that's actually leading towards my next question. I was going to – you know, we're going to get you out of here on this one. I'm going to ask you to play GM for a minute, Spike. So, well, it sounds like you've already started answering this question with everybody got to go, but
yeah,
what would you do as GM in the off season to try to salvage this roster and or this situation?
It's a tough question, right? And it's very easy to criticize what they've done or what they might do without having a response. Without giving specific moves, what I would do, and I don't think this ownership will do it because I don't think they're comfortable having a bad team for 2 or 3 years, is
right.
that you need to make some serious decisions about who really, really, really needs to be here. And I think the only guy – look, I would trade anybody for in the right deal, anybody. but even Drew, and I think Drew Holiday is can be a great player, but if somebody comes and says, hey, you know, we'll give you a blue-chip rookie and a lottery pick, you know, I think you got to go. So what I would do if I was a general manager is realize that the biggest problem that the Sixers have right now is that they don't have any assets. So even if there is a move to make, you know, if a guy you know, like Harden becomes – somebody becomes available, they don't even have the guys to make that move. So what I would do is I think Thad has been great this year, but I think Thad is a much bigger complement to a good team than he is to a team like this.
Right,
and
right.
I think if you can get out of that $10 million a year and get a first-round pick, you do it. I think whatever you can get for Evan Turner, you know, I don't want his $7 million on the books next year, and I don't want an $8 million cap hold the next year. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to cost even more money probably. So if you can get a late first-round pick for Evan Turner and get out of that, I do it. And I just start to try to stack up. Because remember, their 2015 first-round pick is gone, and eventually that Moultrie pick that they got from Miami is going to be gone. And it won't be gone this year. So you're already sorted down two picks, and I think you just got to start working to build picks and build young assets and hope that by the end of the Drew Holiday contract, by the end of the 4 years, you're starting to look up so he doesn't want to leave, you know, and then maybe you start to have something to build with, and that's what I would do. I wouldn't sign Al Jefferson or Paul Millsap or Josh Smith or any of those guys that are going to get overpaid. I don't think they're in a situation where you can sign a guy for $12 million that isn't, you know, the best player on a team. Some guy called up last night and actually had a sort of interesting trade, and he had the money worked out, but it was basically trading Evan Turner and Thaddeus Young for Enes Kanter from Utah. And he's like, look,
Utah.
That way you have a center, you have a point guard, and you're still going to suck, so you still get a first-round pick, you know, and you start to build. And,
right.
and like,
yeah.
that's the kind of move I think they got to make. So that's
you know,
my thought on it.
I
last year, Jimmy was fool's gold. I mean, we talk about that all
yeah.
the time. You know, Derrick Rose getting hurt kind of gave fans, prisoner-of-the-moment type fans, a lot of hope for the team. Maybe
oh,
the yeah. team believed the hype because they went for it with the Andrew Bynum trade, which I'm not upset. You know, I'm not upset with them actually going for it. But, you know, I think that little run in the playoffs last year gave people a lot of false confidence.
Outside of the run for the playoffs, I can't even believe we're having this conversation because even with that, I was, when they made the move, I said, wow, they're making the move. They're going for it. You know, so I bought into the hype. I'm not going to lie. And this conversation has been, like, so sad talking about the Sixers. Blowing everything up at this point, you know. When you look at the East, it's like Miami and everybody else, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well,
I guess this is what they have to do.
Do you want me – I hate to bum you out, but let me bum you out even more for a second. Like, I want you to look at the package that the Oklahoma City Thunder got for James Harden. So they basically got a first-round pick. They got Jeremy Lamb, and they got Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin.
So, okay, who's on an expiring deal. So let me ask you, if we had waited around and not traded for Andrew Bynum and offered Vucevic and offered Harkless and a first-round pick and Andre Iguodala, like, let me tell you something, Jeremy Lamb is not even playing in the league right now. That is a better package. And Andre Iguodala is pretty much an expiring contract. Now, it's not exactly what it doesn't fill the same role that Kevin Martin does, but maybe you can flip Iguodala for Kevin Martin somehow. You know, like, that is a better package than Houston gave up for James Harden. And if the Sixers had done that, they would have – I would have given up Drew Holiday for – I don't care. Like, you would have – the hardest thing to do – is to get one of the top 6 or 7 players in the league that can lead you, that is the first, you know, shoe that's got to drop. You got to get that guy, and they don't have that guy. And if they had, they could have
actually
Harden.
Actually heard rumors.
Wow.
Heard rumors prior to all of these moves being made that, you know, had James Harden made it to free agency, that the Sixers were going to try to roll out the red carpet for him. That, those were just rumors that I heard, but.
Well, yeah, it sounds great.
You
did depress me more, but
because, you know,
just thinking about
it,
we could have had
Thanks,
Harden.
Spike. Thanks. Thanks.
You got it. No problem, guys.
Anyway, Spike, man, thanks for your time. Before we get you out of here, how can the people find your articles and also find you online?
The articles are all at cbsphilly.com, but if you just Twitter, Spike Eskin on Twitter has all my information there, and my site has, you know, but so, you know, you guys know. Just Spike Eskin on Twitter. That's the best way.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks for your time, man. We really appreciate it. And now we're depressed for the rest of the show, thinking we could have had
Harden. All right, guys.
All right, Spike.
Thank you.
All right,
see you later.
Spike Eskin, everybody.
Yeah, man. How about that? That's a great point, though. Have you ever thought about that? The package that they had, you know.
Yeah, no, that, because he's right. That is a better deal than they received from Houston. So how could they really turn that down? I don't think, because like he said, I think Kevin Martin probably fills the role better because they don't really need an Andre Iguodala. They need a shooter. But at the same time, you know, it's the kind of deal that you're not going to turn down. If in turn you want to do something with Iguodala, then they could have, just like he said. So, yeah, it is depressing to hear those kind of scenarios.
We reiterate
that we aren't upset with the Sixers for making the move that they did. Like, you know, who knew that it was going to play out this way?
Yeah, it's just the luck of the draw, man. It's the luck of the draw.
Yeah. James Harden would have fit right in with the Aki's, though, you know what I'm saying? But
oh, man. They would have adopted him.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Yeah, so, you know, shout out to him for that. Hold on 1 second. Anyway, you want to talk some NBA? You want to jump right into our next
interview? Well, because we got our, you know, let's get this next guest out of here,
okay.
And then we'll talk some NBA on the back end of that. So yeah, let's go right to that. If I can find the button to push. All right, so yeah, definitely we got our guest on the line with us, so we're going to go right to that conversation. Today's guest is Khalid Salam. He's the deputy editor at the Shadow League, and he's also on the team of Slam Magazine. The reason that we're bringing him on today is because he wrote an article about 10 days ago entitled Kyrie Irving and the Death of the Ghetto Superstar. In this article, he points out how we foolishly used to judge players' authenticity by their quote-unquote street cred, but players like Kyrie Irving and a few others are putting an end to that theory. So we're going to bring him on the line right now. Welcome into the war room the first time. Khalid, what's going on, brother? You're in the war room.
What's going on, people?
All right, Khalid, what's going on? This is Jimmy. I'll start us off here. First, I just want to say what a great article, and the reason that we were attracted to it is because these are conversations that we have in the war room all the time in terms of people trying to pigeonhole African-Americans and African-American athletes, you know, into you know, one type of a person. So when we read this article, we shared it amongst each other and, you know, tweeted it out. We really enjoyed it. So first off, salute to you for writing the article.
Oh, man, I appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
The first question I had about the article, you talk about Kyrie Irving, but do you think it was a matter of timing? Because you mentioned Kobe Bryant, and we all thought about Kobe Bryant initially when reading the article, how he was the guy who's, you know, from the suburbs, but his game was undeniable. What is the difference between Kyrie Irving and Kobe Bryant in terms of his acceptance?
It's partially the era we're in. It's just, you know, I mean, that was 20 years ago when Kobe came up. Well, almost 20 years ago, and you know, people have gotten used to certain, you know, certain images of black people. Information is different. We understand things more. There's more nuance, you know, from inside the black community and outside of it. People understand things differently than they did 20 years ago. You know, that has a lot to do with it, you know, definitely. And I think also just the fact that Kobe played on such a high-profile team. So the Lakers, you know, always on TV. You know, even though they weren't winning rings in the 90s, still the Lakers. And, they're a team people follow closely, so people overanalyze things. So people overanalyze Kobe. Nobody's really analyzing the Cavaliers like that. You know what I mean?
It's kind of different energy. This is true. This is true. You know, other than that, it's funny because we're all from the inner city, but we like to say, you know, it's a difference of being in the inner city and having so-called street cred. So, you know, one of the things about basketball, and we always talk about basketball as like a culture, and it's taught a lot of us, you know, many things. You know, when you're in a basketball court, you don't care whether someone is white, you know, what their sexual preference is, their religion, all you care about is whether they can hoop or not. So right. It's not surprising that, you know, basketball will be the sport where this kind of thing, you know, is accepted more than others. But B. Austin, you had a point you wanted to make as well, right?
Sure. Khalid, B. Austin here. Thank you. Thank you, first and foremost, for joining us this evening on the War Room. Glad to have you.
You guys just call me Ka, man. Ka?
Got you. Thank you, Ka. Being, you know, early 30-something hip-hop heads, you know, we've all heard the big lyric, either you slang crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot. With basketball kind of being a major source of creativity and an outlet to the pressures of quote-unquote American ghetto life, do you think it was kind of a positive for a lot of these inner-city youth to see a player they could identify with and feel as one of their own? You know, kind of an alternative, no matter how realistic or unrealistic, to some of the other negative images of success in the American dream in the hood?
I think it's a very good, you know, thing to see for players, but not just players, man, for people in general. Like, the bigger, if Kyrie becomes like a mainstream, you know, brand recognition type of star, which he seems to be on the way to doing that, you know, it'll change the narrative, because that narrative needs to be changed quick, fast, in a hurry. And it's not a put down in the city. I'm an inner city guy too,
right?
But the point I'm making is these ideas of being put in a box, you know, and oftentimes we get put in a box by other people, and we don't allow ourselves to grow out of that box, and people don't want us to get out of that box. And being in a box allows you to be controlled, you know. And being controlled is one of the biggest problems that, you know, that still control our community. You know, we think we don't understand these things in the terms we need to, though. So it's like we think, okay, well, so-and-so is, you know, so-and-so is ghetto because he's this, or so-and-so is this because he's this, or he's from this place because he's this. Mm-hmm. You can be from any place and be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2013, Absolutely. That, you know, that feeling of what anybody can be needs to be taken off. I mean, you know, it's the 21st century, man. You know, they got machines that control. They got satellites that can read your handwritten notes. From, you know, they can do all kinds of things now. We still living in old times, a way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and people who deserve a chance to be what they want to be.
So you know, it sounds like you're sort of
right to live the life they want to live, man.
You're subscribing to and trumpeting the ideals of individualism and the presence of exceptional individuals. You know, that gets past limiting the narrative. That's what I'm hearing from somewhere.
Right.
This
there needs to be a new narrative,
mm-hmm.
and that we need it so badly. Because when you think about it, other races and cultures, and ethnicities, they have any number of narratives.
Mm-hmm.
You could be this guy. You could be that guy. You could be this guy. You could be you know it's whatever. It's double digit narratives. 15,
right.
20 options for the average white guy. You know, for the average
right.
black guy, it's like three or four.
Three or four,
right. You could be the ghetto kid. You could be like a buppy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could be like a jock. Like you know what I'm saying? Like
no, you're absolutely right.
There's not that many things they want you to be.
Right.
And that's why going back to his question, that big lyric, that's why it was so powerful when said, because many people felt that way. And
right.
You're right. It has to be. Because
it's true. Because it's absolutely true.
Right.
Mm-hmm. God, you want to be an engineer. Like, let's say you're from the projects, but you want to be an engineer. An engineer? What?
That's not cool.
Yeah, it's not cool.
That means you're doing a lot of math stuff.
But it's not even necessarily.
You know what I'm saying? You do a lot of math. And dudes are like, if the math is not with money, we won't do that kind of math.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
but along those same lines, this is Dev Kai. Along those lines, for the people who didn't read the article, You spoke of the root of this quote-unquote trend being like the 80s and the crack epidemic and, you know, ghetto culture from back then, the materialism from drug dealers and, you know, people of that sort. Can you kind of speak on that for the people who haven't read the article yet and kind of, you know, where you think the root of this problem stems?
Well, how old are you guys? I'm in my mid-30s. I'm 37.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not mid anymore. I can't even say mid anymore.
Right.
I'm holding on to mid. Mid is like 34. I'm 37. So
I'm 21.
I'm right in
the
mid.
We're a couple years younger than you.
I'm 20.
Right,
I'm 21 every year.
We're all from the same generation, though.
Got you. So you know, if you grew up in the 80s like we did, you 13, 14, 15, whatever, in the 80s, you remember how you know, the stakes were so high.
Right.
Like, kids were getting smoked just for any kind of reason, and the drama of the crack game had people on edge. But the way that kind of the legacy of the crack generation or the crack era is what I mentioned, is that it brought materialism into our lives in a very intimate way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, having things and wanting things, that goes on, you know, for the sense of the end of time. Everybody wants to have better things, you know. Usually,
and
you have to, you know, go ahead.
And I cut you off, but that was just part of the whole 80s in general, with, like, you know, the
right.
whole greed thing. Even on Wall Street, the whole greed is good movement. Like,
right.
you know, that just was part of the culture in the 80s, the materialism. Like, you know, whether it was in the inner city or even in the boardroom, the 80s was all about greed. And I noticed how I noticed how your article in the comments turned into an argument about Reaganomics. I found that interesting.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, people. I mean, you know, the guys who follow the Reagan acolytes, his fans, they love that.
Oh,
man. I mean, they love that man.
Oh,
they'll kiss that man in the mouth. They love Ronald Reagan. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. It's a different kind of love. Like, this dude, I respect that man. I like that man's vision, whatever. You know, they like that man on a different level.
But it's amazing. How
I'm not surprised if
they
came out
like
that.
But it's amazing how his supporters, like, I see over the last decade, it's gotten out of control.
Yeah, they did fight it. He's like a god to them. He's like,
well,
literally,
and
like
that's,
a god.
And that's because they see their world, their, if you talk about the narratives, right, their world, their narrative, what their perception of the power structure in this country, it's slipping away. And so they kind of hold him in a high esteem as representing, you know, the immediate past and a representation of their power, if you will.
Right. For a lot of them, certainly
the neocons.
Right, exactly. For a lot of them from the business class, you know, the 80s, you know, was the apex of that kind of thinking, you know.
Right.
When I talked about regulation, what that really means is getting rid of rules, meaning I can get over on anybody and nobody's going to stop me. That's all regulation is. So when things are deregulated, that means you're taking all the rules out. And in the 80s, there were a lot of things you could do, like, you know, companies would have chemicals and they poured into the local rivers and stuff because there were no rules.
Yeah.
And as long as the profit margin kept going up, people want profit margin and, you know, whatever else happens, hey, I don't live in that neighborhood anyway, so I don't really care that the river is polluted.
Absolutely.
I don't really care that the air is bad. That is lead in, you know, lead in the school, whatever, because what we doing, we don't care. We eating so well, we don't care. And if we do get sick, fine, we got the best doctors we can get anyway. That's all that is. That's what that is. People think deregulation is controlling the market. No, it's protecting the market from greed. And what greed really equals is death. That's what it equals.
Mm.
Greed equals death. Mm. And people want to make money off of stuff regardless. And one of the things about the 80s is that the bar for death was raised so high, both psychologically and just in people's everyday lives. If you lived in the inner city, you saw death right up close and personal.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it changed a lot of our minds about things. A lot of us growing up, we're impressionable kids, especially, you know, young boys growing up. We're trying to find our way in the world. We're trying to be men. We're trying to get money. You're trying to understand how you function in a world where you don't really know how to do stuff. You know,
right.
A lot of us didn't have, you know, college graduates in our family. Was nobody really explaining, well, this is what you got to do in order to get this stuff. Okay, so I got to go to school for this amount of years. Okay, but then we see my man on the corner. My man's only 2-3 years older than us. That's a man already got his own apartment. And, you know, he got
this
whatever.
This is how the thinking changed. And,
right,
you know,
right.
And it permeated its way right into our sports, because it became from the whole greed is good concept to now is get rich or die trying. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
And that's how the thinking changed. And it was all based upon,
absolutely,
you know, the result of that era.
So everything became like that. So, like,
right.
so and it affected everything, including basketball. And it's like, well, so like, if you're one of us, you came up like we did, we respect that. If you're from, you know, basically any place outside of the inner city or a major metropolitan area, you came up different than us. And part of it is jealousy. Like, it's probably just jealousy and envy. We're seeing these kids who didn't grow up like we did, still able to live the lives that we hope to live.
So we gravitate towards the other one. Go ahead, Dad.
Mm-hmm. No, I was saying, speaking of that, you know, since we're all from Philly, so, you know, we witnessed firsthand the 10-year run of the poster child of the ghetto superstar / street cred baller in Allen Iverson. But AI aside, because, you know, save for the way his legacy's playing out now, his mark in the NBA, in my opinion, is undeniable. But, Kai, do you find, now this is a question basically about the fans, do you find that many black people tend to overrate certain athletes across all sports because of the quote-unquote street cred that they possess?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's a gang of, you know, there's a reason why I use the Steph Marbury picture. And, it's not a knock against Marbury, who was a talented player. He made it, regardless of what you think about his career, he made a lot of money and changed his whole life and his whole family's life.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's not a knock on Marbury as a personal person. It was more so what he represented, not only to people and in the city, but also companies. And one of the things I learned when I worked at Slam years ago is that street cred is a real thing for the business class, too.
Oh,
it isn't just like a thing that kids, you know, in high school or dudes in the hood think about. Those guys who, you know, with Brooks Brothers suit and tie, who got homes and you know, in Martha's Vineyard or whatever, these guys believe in street cred. Because street cred, again, for them equals money, regardless of the fact that the side effects might equal death for other people, it doesn't really matter. And it's like that same thing, the death and the greed go together time and time. So these guys don't really care about what the side effects are. They live in Park Avenue, or they live wherever they live, you know, and they work for this company, that company, that make these sneakers, these kind of jeans, I mean, these kind of clothes, these kind of whatever, these kind of songs, whatever. The whole street cred thing is a business mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so how are we going to make this guy, our artist, our
brand ambassador,
how are we going to make him sell?
Brand ambassador.
How does he make money for us?
Yeah.
By having this image, right? Right. So we're going to make sure we promote this. Regardless of what happens to kids or anybody growing up who are impacted by this image, we don't really care what happens to these kids.
Right. Like, as far as fans are concerned, like, you know, I can use a name maybe like a Michael Vick. I'm not sure exactly what you think about Michael Vick and his game, but
you guys got to start reading Shadow League. You would know.
I know.
Brother,
I'm not anti Vick. But as an Eagles fan, I want him out. That's just me. He has a ceiling. His ceiling is crazy low, in my opinion.
So, yeah, if you talk to a lot of fans, like, when it comes to Mike Vick, this is, like, where I find
a lot of black fans.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
This is where the street cred thing plays really, you know,
well, you know what it is?
They argue for him like there's no other.
You know, there's people who think Mike Vick is a top 10 quarterback. I was like, he's never been a top 10 quarterback.
He's never been a top 15.
Like, you know, even in his first season with the Eagles, when he was second runner up for MVP, I think that had to do with more so the surprise factor.
Yeah.
Like, his stats weren't really all that. Like, he threw.
And
like,
it was only sustained over about eight games. People forgot by the time the Giants game came, the miracle in the Meadowlands.
The Bears.
He had already
him out.
Regressed. Yeah, he had already regressed even in that game. It just, you know, that game, the way it ended, you know, it kind of kept everything, you know, on the forefront, kind of kept the momentum going. But, yeah, but that's one of the athletes that we find when we're in sports circles. People defend Mike Vick to no end, and I think they kind of overrate what he actually does on the football field. And I think it's all due to them being able to relate to him more than they can relate to the next guy on the NFL field.
Which,
so I thought that
rooting,
was a good example to bring up in, you know, talking about your
rooting, rooting for the underdog, rooting for, you know, a representation of a disenfranchised community. And the thing that I love about sports is it's an opportunity to have social dialogue about, you know, some of the issues that come to the forefront with your article, but it's also an opportunity to take a man and look at the man for what he is and his talents and throw a lot of things out of the window and just say, you know, well, let's talk about the sport. Let's talk about the strategy and tactics behind the sport. And let's talk about the numbers and where that person fits in. All of the, you know, all of the where Mike Vick came from, you know, his story, respect it, understand it, celebrate it for what it is. But this man right now, today, as an NFL quarterback, is trash. And here's why. Here's why. And this is my conversation. It's kind of funny because we get into these conversations with people from different walks of life, different, you know, different social backgrounds. So to the black people, a lot of times I find that we're saying, let's look at this guy's game. Let's get everything out of the way. Let's look at his game. Wow. To the white folks, it's like you're having a conversation. Well, he's a dog killer. He's a murderer. Let's slow down a little bit. Let's slow down because that has nothing to do with him as a player. So it's kind of interesting what these guys represent to different people.
It's funny you say that because it's like people don't have the ability to be objective because of who they can't separate the man from the player. And Kai, the question I have is I do read the Shadow League and I read a lot of your articles, so I know how you feel about Mike Vick, but I also see how a lot of your you know, your peers feel about him. So does it ever ever get into arguments over there? Because
All the time.
I could only imagine because you guys had an article
Because to me, Vick is the perfect example of that. It's like if Vick had the same exact numbers, same exact career. Let's say he would have did the Dolph stuff. He would have went to jail. Same exact numbers, but he wasn't from.
Bad
from
news.
Newport News, right? He's from Newport News.
Yeah.
Let's say he wasn't from Newport News. Let's say he's from Richmond or whatever, you know. Or just, you know, there's a lot of nice areas of Virginia, in that whole area. Let's say he's
Hampton.
From a nice,
if
a nice
Hampton. Area. He's from Hampton.
Right. The whole idea of how we felt about him would be entirely different. Entirely different. We wouldn't care about him as much.
We wouldn't care.
We would still like him because he was fast, athletic, black, et cetera, et cetera. But he would just be another name.
That
he wouldn't be the way he is now. People love Mike Vick because they think his story is somehow more authentic.
Yeah.
This is the most authentic expression of being of blackness, of what it means to be a black person in America. And I'm like, it is not. It is just one part of it. And it's one part in a lot of ways that we have to stop making the stuff
change.
Better. Like, for example, I'll give you a perfect example. I went to school in Atlanta. I went to Clark. So, like, when I first started going to school, you know, I'll be honest, I never even know a lot about – I didn't know a lot of rich kids growing up, really, really any. I knew some kids who might have had money, but they were like international students and stuff. So it didn't really resonate the same with me. But so I go to school, and it's, you know, regular black people with – and their parents would, like, pay their tuition with, like, a check. Like, here you go. And I'm like, yo, I'm like, you don't got to go – I'm like – you mean people. I'm like, you don't got to do no financial aid stuff. He's like, no, I'm a dad paid it. I was like – pay what? My tuition. Just at one moment with a check? Tuition is like, you know, for the, it paid for both semesters at one time. So we're talking about, you know, upwards of $22,000, just like that. So I'm like, so if you got $22,000 just to write the check, that means your bank account is diesel. Like, you know what I mean? You got 22 stacks, you just blow right there. That has no impact on what you do on a regular basis. What I learned was that a lot of those kids from those nice areas, and their dads are senators and et cetera, et cetera. A lot of those kids had a lot of anxiety about being from those kind of families.
Mm-hmm.
And they really wanted to be seen as, in the city, they wanted to be seen as, you know, ghetto and whatever they thought that meant. For them, it meant street cred in a way. It meant they were tough. And they were more black somehow. They were more authentic. They felt like their background made them somehow less authentic. And they would always say, we have the debates in school, in class about stuff, different artists, rappers at the time, and how, you know, what the impacts were, you know, you know, how it felt or whatever. And what I noticed was they really valued in the city stuff. And I was like, my man, we could switch right now. You know, like if you like, if you think this is what's good, we can switch parents, whatever. We can switch all of this. I'm telling you, because I'm telling you, this is not how it really goes. It's a hard way to live if you're from the inner city.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean I'm less or more black than you. I'm telling you, it just means we're just equally as black, but you have a better chance to have success in your life because your dad wrote your tuition in one check. And you shouldn't feel bad about the fact that your dad could do that. It's a backwards way of thinking, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what, though? Bringing it back to Kyrie Irving in the article, I guess you would have to. Is AAU made a huge difference in this? Because now you have the best players playing the best players regardless of neighborhood and things of that nature, because AAU has become more prevalent.
Yeah, AAU definitely has an impact. You know, AAU definitely has an impact of taking guys and mixing people together. So, you know, different people from different cities, different neighborhoods have a chance to be around each other. And that has an impact, too. There were, like, some things about that I thought about including in the story, but I didn't want to make the story too long.
Yeah,
but, you know, AAU definitely has a big impact in it because it's so prevalent. I mean, you can't even – if you're nice at any level in basketball, regardless of where you're from or whatever, you're playing AAU ball. That's just what it is.
Yeah. And you know, like I know, because you're from Philadelphia, so you know that when it comes – like I mentioned earlier, when it comes to hoops, you don't care nothing about – when you're on the court, all you care about is whether they can hoop or not. You know what
right,
I mean?
But you don't even know. I mean, you don't really know. You see a guy with shorts on and sneakers. You have no idea who his parents are.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't know this guy's dad is the mayor. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. You don't know what's going on.
And speaking of, like, we couldn't talk about this whole thing without bringing up, you know, the whole Jalen Rose comments about
the Fab Five.
Grant Hill.
about Grant Hill. I mean, we don't really have to talk about it, but we definitely have to bring it up. You know, the whole Uncle Tom comments, because when you said that, when you gave us that story from when you were in school, it kind of reminded me of that. Like, it's, you know, it's just a backwards way of thinking that you're not cool because your parents were able to pay, you know, a check for your tuition, or, you know, you didn't come up without your dad or something like that. Like,
it's conditioning, man.
It is conditioning. And it's the kind of condition that limits people. Because you're judging somebody and making them your enemy or adversary based upon something that really should make y'all united.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. And the thing that's even more tricky about it is that how we think about it is also how mainstream thinks about it. So like if you're from the hood, I mean, especially depending on what industry you're in, but if you're from the hood, mainstream America loves you and thinks you're also more black. You know what I mean? They think you're more black. Oh, he's from the project.
You know what?
That's okay.
That's why
he's cool,
and that's why your article was like, you know, that's why it resonated with us, and you know, more people need to have these conversations, man. So at the end of the day, man, we appreciate you for writing that. Appreciate you for writing that article, man.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
It's unspoken to me because, like, I mean, for Kyrie's game is so skilled, and it reminds you of a lot of street ball dudes, really. Like, his game, his handle is, come on, yo.
Yeah,
next level. It really is. It's next level. Like, I'm like, yo, there hasn't been a guy with handle since Iverson.
Yeah.
Well, look, man, we definitely appreciate you coming on. We got to get to some more segments, but we'd love to have you back. You know, anytime.
Yeah.
You got something that you need to say, the War Room is home to you. You know, we actually have relationships with a few people over there at the Shadow League. You know, Keith Klingscales, and we did a panel with Michael Tillery a few months ago.
Nice.
So, you know, shout out to everybody over there at the Shadow League. We love what you guys are doing. But before we get you out of here, you know, let everybody know how they can get to the Shadow League and how they can see your writing.
Oh, yes, yeah, it's real simple. Just www.theshadowleague.com.
Okay.
And you come to the page and you'll see all kind of stuff, and we'll make your life better.
No doubt.
Right. Up and down.
And Kai, man, we appreciate it. And last thing, man, I also want to tell you I appreciate that article you did on Nas. Life is good. So.
Appreciate it, man.
You know what? We do a segment called Hip Hop and Sports. So we might have to call you back for one of those too.
Hey, man, I'm here for all kind of stuff. You want to talk about sports? basketball. We can talk about quote unquote non black stuff. Like, I'm an animal dude. We can talk about lions and tigers, bro. It's nothing.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my.
We can talk about all kinds of stuff. I'm on that National Geographic stuff, man. I'm good with all that.
You're not getting put in the box, right?
Nah, man. Yeah, I don't do boxes. Not, it's 2013, man. We above that, man.
All right,
bro.
Thanks for everything. Thanks for your time.
All right, take it easy, guys.
All right, take it easy.
All right,
Sam.
Kai, thank you.
All right, that's Khalid Salam, everybody, from theshadowleague.com and former senior editor at Slam Magazine. I know a lot of you basketball heads out there read Slam Magazine, so I'm pretty sure you've read a lot of his stuff in your time. So make sure you follow him on Twitter. You know, keep up with them. B. Austin, you want to tell everybody real quick how they can get in touch with us so we can talk some hoops?
Absolutely. Check out our website at warroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. If you want to get your street cred up, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk.
Kids out there, don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed to have a mommy and a daddy. You don't be ashamed of that. That's a good thing.
Listen,
all right.
Bottom line is, be whoever
you
are.
Yo, don't go visit the tattoo parlor too tough and be ashamed of it 20 years from now.
Just be
amen.
Who you are. If you soft, be soft. You know what I'm saying? Anybody, man, listen. The NBA Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, Android phone. And if you still happen to have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, you can listen to The War Room, although your phone is outdated. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Go to our website and click on the Stitcher logo or go to stitcher.com/The War Room, which is one word. And when asked for a coupon code, make sure to use the War Room because that will enter you into a contest, and everybody likes to win contests, so do that. Now, let's jump right into the NBA talk. And as usual, we'll start off with the NBA players of the week, and this week that is one Monta Ellis as well as Ty Lawson.
Okay, Monta. Monta does it again. He led the Bucks to a 3-0 week. He averaged 24 points, 9 assists, and 5 steals per game. Do y'all notice every time Monta wins this award, it's because he averaged 8 or 9 assists? Yo, he can average 4 points a game, but if he averages 9 assists, he's going to win the player of the week.
He doesn't notice it. That's the thing. He doesn't notice the assists.
Yeah, that's because everybody knows that he can score whenever he wants to. Monta gun. So anytime he puts up 8 or 9 assists, you know, his game is at another level because he can score with the best of them whenever he feels like it. Just like
you know what? Those assists probably come when he's trying to cross somebody over and the ball gets away from him and somebody just picks it up and shoots it.
Yeah, my man is allergic to that assist.
It's probably accidental joint.
Yo, yeah, because he got J.J. Redick out there now, so he just roll it off his foot and J.J. pick it up and shoot that joint.
Uh-huh.
Ty Lawson
led the Nuggets to a 3-0 week. He averaged 21.7 assists and 1.7 steals. He hit a game winner on March 1st with 0.2 seconds left to give the Nuggets that 2-point victory over the Thunder. And he had 30 against Portland. I actually think Monta hit a buzzer beater last week, too.
His buzzer beater was crazy.
Yeah, it was like an off-balance three that he hit to beat the Rockets with like an off-balance three-pointer at the buzzer. Because Monta, nice.
More impressive than that, did you see the 360 reverse he did? Yeah, Monta out there.
Or was it a 360 reverse three-pointer? Because he like
what,
shoot
No.
It's a 360 three-pointer.
He jumped. He went baseline, jumped on one side of the rim, did a 360 to the other side to get a layup. It was crazy. Like, Monta is in full 2K13 mode right now, yo. And it's out of control, man, because, you know, but, again, I don't know who they play, but what I've noticed about this whole player of the week, it usually happens when you play the Wizards. But anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. Tony Parker out 3 more weeks with an ankle injury. So my question to you, gentlemen, how will this affect the Spurs as well as the seeding in the West overall?
Man, this was a good conversation.
I think it could be. I think it's going. Oh, go ahead, Dev. Sorry.
Rudy. No, I was just saying this was a good conversation for like last week because I had some thoughts about it, but they've gone something like 4-5-1 ever since he got hurt. It's one of those things where the Spurs are such a deep team. They're always such a deep team. You know, if somebody gets hurt for a little while, I think they have enough back there to step up and keep it going. But I don't know if they're going to keep it going at the particular rate that they're doing right now. But, you know, you got Manu coming off the bench, so he always can come off the bench and run the
Manu
show. And he's been handling the ball a little bit more in Tony Parker's absence. So, I don't know. The Spurs are good, man. I still don't see them winning the title, but they're a good team, man. What do you guys think?
Slide Manu to the one. And the engine still will run. It's that simple. I mean, Tony Parker isn't really a nine or ten assist type guy anyway. He's known for getting in the lane before you can stop him.
Penetration.
20 years. And so with Manu, you're actually probably going to get as many assists, if not more. So with him running the show, so I don't think they miss a beat. To discount what Tony Parker can do over the long haul, but I think short term they'll be all right, and he'll come back with fresher legs, less fatigue.
No, but the thing is, like, because we know Manu's gonna get his minutes, but the dude Popovich, man, because he didn't just slot Manu to the one, like at least not in the starting lineup. He got Corey Joseph starting. At the one.
Listen,
no, but Manu played so many minutes.
Yeah, Manu played 26 minutes to Corey Joseph's 24, so it's not like he's just being used as a token. The dude is playing.
Yeah, he's playing. But you know what, though? Listen, they'll be fine until the playoffs start, and then they're going to lose anyway, Tony there or not. Because once he can't get in the lane, you know. But I noticed something this year that they're doing a lot more of. Because before it would just be Tony Parker getting into lane, causing havoc, and that's how they ran their entire offense. Now, Tony is playing off the ball, what he was playing. They're running their point guards off the ball a lot. So Popovich has actually switched their offense. They're running them off the ball across double screen and then creating from there, whether it be pick and roll, pick and pop. And that's not what they used to do in the past. So as crazy as it sounds, Popovich has kind of switched their offense in the offseason. So
right.
Maybe,
and even
maybe this season.
He doesn't panic, Jim. It's like he's like, okay, Tony's gone, but we're going to do the same thing. Because we just spoke about Corey Joseph and Manu, but Patty Mills got 22 minutes last night. So he still kept the same basic lineup, you know, without Tony Parker. Manu came and did
what Manu did. When you have multiple championships, yo, you never panic, yo. Yo, Phil Jackson would be down 30 and be on the bench chilling. Like, I mean,
he'd be sweet.
When you
have to take naps.
Yo,
they like, Phil, you
want to
call a timeout? Timeout for
guys
what?
Guys who have won multiple championships, like, they're like, well, I got jobs.
These
other jokers, man, they're going to lose their job at any minute.
Yo,
Phil
Jackson
be like, timeout for what? Like,
I know.
They get it right eventually.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, we get a TV timeout coming up. Yo, his sideline demeanor was the best, man.
See, but that was cool, though, BJ, because at the end of the game, Phil always had them timeouts that he needed.
Yep, exactly.
And a close one, so.
But Popovich, when you have the kind of success these guys have, it's like, you know, you have the ability to kind of, like, be cool.
And when you're a coach like that, players buy in, man. So, a lot of times when you have some coaches now, granted, coaches aren't that, I guess, enforceful, like, say, for an NFL, where – I mean, kind of like the coaches mean a little bit more, whereas in basketball, it's like damn near that the players run the systems more than the coaches. But when you have coaches like those guys, like Phil and like Pop, I mean, players buy in, man. You can plug and play a lot of times and plug people in and still be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get you guys' opinion on this right here. Serge Ibaka, man. He was fined $25,000. No suspension, but $25,000. For basically hitting my man Blake Griffin in his man region. My question was, too harsh? Was it too lenient? Was it a justified punishment? How do you guys feel about it? Because it seems to be random as hell in terms of how they punish players. But what's your opinion?
First time offender? I don't know. That's what I've been hearing all week. But,
come on, man.
That's not my. That's why I said that's what I've been hearing all week. Like, I think as a man, and the league is run by men, you chop a dude in his nuts. Like, come on, man. The penalty should be a little more harsh. No, but to be completely serious, I'm surprised that he didn't at least get suspended for one game. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah,
you know,
I think
the funny,
they
you know, the
really
funniest,
looked
the funniest,
at
the funniest
half
argument I heard was that people said they didn't suspend him because they have a national game against the Lakers tonight. And I'm thinking in my head, like, who the hell tunes in to see OKC play to see Ibaka? Like, you know what? I got to watch this game because Serge Ibaka is playing. No one does that. But, I mean, that's some of the excuses I've seen. Like, it's a national game, so they're not going to suspend him. That's BS. I just don't think there's any rhyme or reason in terms of these suspensions, how they're dulled out. I understand first-time offender, but just, like, if you look at some of the suspensions, I mean, what rule book are they going by?
Yeah. I think that was a freestyle right there. Because, I mean, like, they just did 25K, chopped them in the – and the gonads, and they just threw 25K out there. I think they were just freestyling with that. I don't know what kind of protocol they go by for, like, what they were.
Whatever kind
of
day Hugh Jackson's having. If you're having a bad day, you're going to get screwed. If you're having a good day, you know, he may be lenient with you.
Yeah.
I just don't get it, though, man. Austin, what is it you want to say, Austin?
Serge said it wasn't intentional.
It was like a karate chop-looking joint, though.
We got the tape, sir. I got the tape.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, sir.
I saw the tape. Yeah, I saw the tape. Yeah.
Did y'all hear what Kobe said? They asked Kobe about it. He said, "I
Kobe
was smacked him
tough.
In his mouth."
Kobe got
all of a sudden. They asked Kobe what he would have done if had that been him. He said, "I would have smacked him in his mouth." That's
Damn,
why
man.
The whole thing between him and Serge was kind of tumultuous throughout the whole game. Like, you saw them actually standing there talking trash to each other, but trying to hide it from the ref. It looked like a real stern, calm conversation.
Yeah,
but I can
man.
Only imagine
Kobe,
what they were saying to each other.
Kobe
say anything.
He thinks that he can say what he wants to.
Exactly.
You ain't smack Roger Bell in the mouth. You ain't smack Chris Childs in the mouth. Yo, Roger Bell.
The
like,
older
yo,
you get, the more you smack him. Yo,
you know how old he is, he wacky.
Russian sickle and put him in the sleeper hole. Chris Childs straight tapped his chin, though.
Him and Reggie had the most transvanti fight that I've. Yo, that fight was. Yo,
yeah.
They like lifted each other up on the scores table and was pushing each other in the face.
Yeah. Kobe got a pocket for that because.
I don't even know how he was talking trash to Serge Ibaka because Serge Ibaka is English. He don't speak the King's English that well.
And plus,
West Manchild chimed in on Twitter. He said that he only got $525K because of you know where he's from. That's how they greet each other.
Yo.
He's out to the motherland.
I didn't say that. That came from Twitter. But anyway.
Yeah, and you know, Powell's his man because they play on the Spanish national team again.
Yeah,
in
the Spanish. Yeah, he's
Powell's
an African Spaniard.
On the Spanish team. Yeah.
Yeah. He's an African. He was ringing.
Yeah. He's an African American. Yeah, African Spaniard.
He was
yo,
ringing.
How you get on that team? Seriously.
Yo.
Come on, man. How you get on that team?
I'm Pakistan. I'm trying for the Pakistani team.
Adel Harris is the coach of the Chinese national team, though. Come on, man. You don't even speak that language, man.
My man was in practice with signs. He's putting signs up. You run left.
Yo!
All right, man. Let's go.
You run
here to corner. You run here to top of key.
Yo. You bad words that are coming out of my mouth.
Y'all gotta chill,
yeah.
Yo.
Yo, chill, man.
I'm gonna move on.
Can we just all get along?
It's a clinic worker who says that LeBron, Ramon James, Dwayne Wade, and Jameer Nelson have purchased PEDs there. Did you guys hear the story? And how serious do you think these implications are? And do you think they have any merit to them?
Well, there was a female worker at this clinic. who says that a guy by the name of Mr. Paul could come in and purchase listen, Mr. Paul
I confess.
PEDs for somebody and sign out as LJ. Now everybody's all suspicious because LeBron's
Mr. Paul.
Yo.
Hey,
listen though. His personal friend and agent is named Rich Paul. So, you know, Mr. Paul basically was just his last name, but they said he used to sign out as LJ. Now, she said the same thing with, like, Wade, like a representative would come pick up stuff, but she said Jameer Nelson has shown up himself in person and picked stuff up from the clinic.
They just pooped on my man, Mir.
I know. Mir just come in like, y'all got them vitamins?
Nobody really knows if, because this is the, I mean, nobody knows if this woman is credible or not. A few people came out with videos on YouTube talking about it, but you know how the messenger gets shot, and everybody came to LeBron's defense. You know, no, there's no way the king, and no way this, and
the king,
the royal penis is clean.
Cliff Paul is here to assist.
Cliff Paul with the Cliff big Paul dookie mustache. Yo, I can't. It's crazy, but in this world of cheating in sports, yo, I mean, when you go from boxing to baseball, football, I can't say no. I can't, like, I gotta at least entertain the story, and I also can't be surprised if it comes out to be true.
I'm not surprised. I'm just funny.
LeBron is a freak that we've never seen.
Paul.
Yeah, I know. The name game is horrible, man. He'd have been better off with Ron Mexico. What's up?
I said, to your point, Lori McConnell, Casey Mack just sent a tweet in. He says, the bottom line is where there's smoke, there's fire, so he wouldn't be surprised at all. So it's kind of the same point you're making.
See, with me, it's not a LeBron thing. It's not a Wade thing. It's just like PJ just said, in this day and age, like, you'd be silly and naive to put it past anybody. I don't care how much you like a player. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm a big Kobe fan. I'm like, but at 34 and 17 years in the league with terrible knees, why is he dunking on three dudes off the dribble again all of a sudden? Like,
from the
I'm not accusing Kobe of nothing. But what I'm saying is, I wouldn't be surprised at any athlete, you know, if you find that kind of stuff
but
out.
But this, to me,
you know?
This is one of the saddest things about sports that's happened in my lifetime, because anytime anybody does
anything
extraordinary, there's a cloud over everything in sports now. It's like, you know, growing up watching sports, it was never like that.
I blame Sammy Sosa. I blame Sammy Sosa and his complexion.
Yeah. He pink. Yo. Hey, yo, here's the thing, too, that you got to consider, yo. I wonder how they're defining performance-enhancing drugs, because
great
I ain't going to front. Science is like the supplements and, like, science and all that stuff that's going on right now, just as fast as we see these athletes and how athletic and, like, you know, crazy they are now, like, from size and athletic ability, science is moving at that same speed, though. I ain't going to front. I'm not trying to take up for these guys. But, for instance, like, I'll every now and again take, like, protein, right? Make a protein shake with some fruit in it.
I'm not a professional athlete. I might be on something right now.
My business is going out purple
man.
Sometimes.
That's why his analyst game be strong.
But going into GNC, dog, just to get plain protein, you need I need a guide to, like, the board to show me where's the regular protein, because everything has got creatine in it, got a little bit of this in it, got some kind of capsule, some kind of this and that. Like, everything now is so, like, extra. Like,
well,
even
told,
to, like,
I
the
totally,
regular supplements.
Totally get,
it's just crazy
I totally
stuff.
Get where you were. And to your point, we've actually had, like, two people on our Facebook page come clean about using steroids this past week. It's crazy, though, but it's like when you play for a professional team, there's so much
I ain't got
at
no
state.
Reason to do that.
There's somebody you can run that by. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much
right.
with professional sports. They're not in the same position you are.
Think about deer antler spray, though, cuz.
Oh, no, PJ.
You
took that 3-week trip to Africa. You might have thought you was going to be wrestling rhinoceros.
Yo, we were on that safari. I didn't know what was going to go down. My man had us on a Jeep with no windows and a canvas roof with no gun. I might have to take some extra supplements. But,
I don't profess to be an expert, you know what I'm saying? Because the guys who cops are taking steroids on our Facebook page this week were, you know, basically calling everybody else uninformed, uneducated, and we don't know what this is supposed to do. Yeah, good for you. But at the same time, I mean, like people say, they use the old cliche, when there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, LeBron is a freaking cyborg. When is the last time y'all saw him seriously get hurt? And if something happens to him in a game where it looks like, oh, that looked nasty, yo, 5 minutes later, he's like 45 inches in the air dunking the basketball, man. It's just a little bit.
Fishy.
But I ain't accusing nobody.
To your point, Dev, he just bent his knee back at like a 90-degree angle, came right back the next play, and knocked down
a human being can do that.
I've always been a part of the contingency that just chalks it up to, you know, LeBron James being an alien or a cyborg or, you know, or something like that. I mean, I guess those type of people come around once in a blue moon. I mean, according to old heads, especially Sonny Hill, that's how Wilt Chamberlain was. But I don't know. It's just I think I would be naive, and I think anybody else who's just quick to jump to somebody's defense just because he may be your favorite player, you know, I just think that's a little bit naive, especially in today's day and age where a lot of our so-called sports heroes have been found to be doing the wrong thing, but, you know, it's, I can't.
And that's a good point. To that point, yo, not to get off topic, but I heard a commercial on one of the R&B urban radio shows maybe last week for deer antler spray, and the advertisement was for it. No, I'm listening, right hand to the almighty, yo. The commercial was saying that the antler spray was for performance, though, in bed, like sexual. Like, that dude was like, you've heard about it in the NFL now, but this is what it's used for. This was a regular, you know, sounding old Caucasian man. I mean, it was a legit commercial.
Well,
I mean, his race has nothing to do with it being legit, but I'm just...
Sex is definitely a sport.
Yeah, it is.
Well,
but I heard nothing about it until the Ray Lewis joint came out.
Well,
now this... What's up?
So what do you guys think? Because this really hasn't hit. And that's another thing. Like, I don't know if they're, like, protecting them, or I don't know if it's a situation where, you know, reputable reporters and sites, do they not want to jump on this because of the whole Manti Te'o thing? Are they being more careful in their reporting? Because you really haven't heard or seen this on any major sites. I saw it on a USA Today message board, but there wasn't a story about it. They just got a little message board where they can go talk.
The story sounded kind of, you know, fishy to me.
Fishy
to me. It just didn't sound right. It didn't sound they had any kind of reputable people to even, like, because no one's even investigating at this point, at least to my knowledge.
What they said is the woman is not even a sports fan, so she really didn't have any reason to slander cats,
She said the
LJ thing, and I think somebody else just took those names and tried to put two and two together. I don't think the woman actually said that. She just said Mr. Paul comes in and signs out for somebody with the initials LJ. So if somebody put it together, like, you know, his agent dude is Ron Paul, whatever his name is.
Do they test for PEDs in the NBA? I never heard of anybody get busted before, dude.
Yeah, they said their testing program is a joke. Yeah, it's a joke.
Yeah,
so this could be the sport that you can do it and actually get away with it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
do you think there's
marijuana use
in the NBA?
LeBron looks like the Incredible Hulk. He's the fat, you know. Matter of fact, that's a good analogy because the Incredible Hulk had hops and he was quick and he was diesel.
And he used to wear tight dungarees, and that's how he dressed when he goes to the game. He used to wear tight, ripped off dungarees.
When he switched back after being a Hulk, the dungarees weren't torn no more.
So what do you guys think? Because, you know, eventually, I'm sure he's heard. I mean, LeBron's a Twitter head. So
when those reputable sites and reporters do start asking, what kind of response do you think he's going to have? Because we all know, you know, LeBron, he cares a lot what people
stop
think.
Dunking.
You know?
I'm going to just have to stop dunking then, since you guys are going to stop dunking.
I'm mad at that.
I'm supposed to be twitching and his biceps twitching. I'm supposed to be mad at that. Yeah, we need that.
Shout out to Sam I Am, yo.
You look more like E.T. or Gollum.
What, I'm supposed to get mad about that? You're supposed to get mad about that?
He sound ugly. Yo, his voice ugly. Ew. He sound like he ugly.
Yo, everything was ugly but his game. Sam is
good.
I'm supposed to be mad at that? He sound like the boy Eric Williams from basketball. Ugly horse looking boy.
Like who's ugly, Sam or Eric? Never mind.
Yo, imagine both of them next to each other. You probably go cross-eyed trying to look away.
Yo, PJ, speaking of reality TV, yo, I know you saw Love & Hip Hop.
Oh, yeah, you know I did, yo. You know I did.
I ain't going to get to that. We can talk about that another time, man. I got another sports-related question before we get out of here, man. The Heat, 16-game winning streak, man. Can anybody stop them at this point?
Oh, hold up, Jim, real quick, because I was supposed to give a shout-out earlier in the show, and I forgot about it. Speaking of streaks, shout-out to the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, 24 straight games with a point. You know, a lot of people don't understand how hockey standings are scored, especially Stephen A. Smith, who went on TV and embarrassed himself last week. But, yeah, they're balling. Well, they're pucking. And shout-out to Brittany Griner, who put up 50 in her last regular season home game.
Her.
And got a homie. Dunk. Got a dunk off the baseline drop step. Come on, dude, chick.
Yo, Brett had an illustrious career.
Yo.
And I'm looking forward to seeing him in the NBA, man.
Yeah, I hope the Sixers can get him. I hope the Sixers could get him. We can use him. We get a good pick. We get that boy, Brittany.
I should not
slander Brittany Griner. Because y'all talking about whether she's a man or a woman.
I'm not talking about Brittany. I'm talking about
Brett. I think she's a hermaphrodite. I just believe that when your voice looks, when you look like that and your voice sounds like that, I believe you were born as a man. I could be wrong. Listen,
he's just
I've been
being
wrong
honest.
Before.
He's
Listen,
just
I've been
being
like,
honest.
Exactly. I've been wrong before.
And we're
I
about
believe
honesty.
That's a man. I believe. That's why we got transgender MMA. We got transgender WNBA.
So you're saying basically the sexuality of Brittany Griner is
fishy, fishy.
Dig it.
Yeah, right, if mama named Clee,
I'ma call it Clee. Here's my thing, right, Deb. I got you with the whole Blackhawks thing. I wasn't going to say anything just because Ranked Top 5 is in our chat room, and you know they're from Chicago, so I didn't want to give them the
You don't give them no props. It don't matter, like Spike said earlier in the show, they're not going to win the cup, so it really don't matter. They got their lucky cup a couple years ago. So, yeah, back
Damn.
To that heat streak, man. That heat streak is...
Damn.
There's a lot, you know, we talk about all this stuff, Jim, on our Facebook page, so you know there's a lot of quote-unquote heat haters out there. There's a lot of heat lovers out there, so it's rare that you get, like, the middle ground when you talk about this stuff. So, you know, we posted it out there to see how impressed people were. And a lot of people saying, you know, well, they haven't beat any real good teams. 9 of the teams they beat were trash. 8 of them were playoff caliber, and teams like the Lakers and Rockets are barely playoff caliber this year. So what do you guys think? I mean, I think it's difficult in any sport to win 16 straight games.
Man, it is. This is still professionals. If they would have lost 8 of those games, we'd be having a different conversation, wouldn't we?
Yeah. But, I mean, because, you know, any given night, because Orlando, came back from 20 last night, and it took a LeBron, actually his first buzzer-beating shot as a Miami Heat player, left the layup. I was actually proud to see that, because nobody goes to the rack in those situations anymore. Everybody's so forget.
Pop. Yo, all my thing is this, though. Orlando performed. Orlando played very
pop.
Well.
He'd be much better. Bring it to the whack.
Jameer probably just read up yesterday. That's why they was playing so well. But anyway, I think that in terms of the Eastern Conference, and I've been saying this all season, I can't see anybody beating him in the Eastern Conference.
So you just succumbed. You just went all the way over.
It's not that I've succumbed. It's just that I watch the game.
You offended Brad with that one right there.
No, I'm
saying that right now. You offended my man Austin with that.
I'm trying to be objective. Like, whether I want them to win and whether I think they'll win are two different things. But at the end of the day, when you watch them play basketball, I feel
like it sounds a little like there's a little exuberance in your voice, man. You sound...
Also, you're a little Trey Manny over there.
No, I know Austin.
Why
you
emotional
right now, man?
You real excited about LeBron.
Listen, I am not a LeBron fan at all. I think he's the best player in the game, but I'm not a fan of his. I don't care if he ever wins. I don't care if he goes out and breaks his leg tomorrow and has to retire. I don't care. But at the end of the day,
you don't care if that man breaks his leg.
Over here.
Yo, what I'm saying is this. When you watch them play basketball and you watch the other teams in the Eastern Conference play basketball, it's a different level of basketball. These guys.
Man, my man with two first names is offended. My man Paul George got something to say.
I think it'll get a little bit more difficult in the playoffs. I'm with you. I don't really – I mean, if I was to make a pick, I'd definitely have them going through the East. But like Austin said, I don't say it with as much exuberance in my voice, not because of any other reason besides the fact that I think in a playoff series, the Knicks, maybe the Pacers would give them a little bit of trouble just because of their size. But I just think when this team turns it up, like it's just difficult when you have three of the top 15 players in the league. Like it's just difficult
to beat
that team.
Cool.
And then
they
got a lot of cheap role players that are good role players. You know, people that just want to win chips, so they just take $5 to play with the king in his court. And
That's the thing. It's going to be tough. But like you said, bro, I mean, Indiana got some guys that can defend on the wing, and they got a post presence of my man Hibby. I mean, what you would need to combat that type of team, but it's just tough when you got players that –
Everybody's
like
going to jump behind them, and they're going to lose in probably about five games.
Yeah, no, I'm not jumping behind them. I'm just saying as a matchup. If you look at a team,
not much in the East.
I'm just saying
I'm not saying you, but as Dev alluded to, there are a lot of Heat lovers.
I actually have the Heat coming out of the East and have them winning the chip. I do. But it's much like you say, I'm not really invested in that. I'm a Sixers fan and a basketball lover. So I like to see competition. And then we get into the whole super teaming thing, which we've talked to. We beat that dead horse. You know, they're the super friends. They like to hug and throw alley-oops. That's what it is. I mean, so it's hard to beat a team with four or five Hall of Famers. I mean, that's just is what it is.
Yeah.
Right. Five Hall of Famers? I'm trying to count the five Hall of Famers.
Four. Ray Allen might make it, man. I don't know.
Ray Allen's going to make it.
No, yeah, all right.
If Reggie Miller made it.
I think it's Rio in the Hall of Fame or something. That's a
Juwan Howard was
who's
part
Rio?
Of the Fab Five, man. He gone.
Who's Rio? Dad, he don't know who Rio is. Tell his name
who
Rio is,
Rio.
Man.
You better watch some Harlem Shake videos, man. Rio.
Super Rio, man.
Dude, the Mario Brothers outfit on.
Yo, as much as they're talking about LeBron's dunks before the game, I think Mario Chalmers' dunks are just as impressive. I didn't know he could dunk, let alone always lay it up in the game.
He always laid it up in the game.
And plus, Rio, they clutch
performance.
Short guy dunk. That's what it is. Yeah. Rio, they clutch performance. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's, I just think, like any other time, it's going to get a little harder in the playoffs. But,
I mean, at the end of the day,
it's just difficult
to see anybody beating
those dudes, man.
I was just talking about the, them coming through the East that way because there's still a shot that, you know, if they have to play OKC again that, you know,
I think OKC is worse.
I think they're worse.
Late, and Jimmy,
it's
we
possible.
Got a big guest for you to announce for next week. But
yeah,
I'm going to say this one thing.
I'm about to get there right now.
I rarely agree with Charles Barkley. He said one thing last night that I actually agree with. I don't think OKC can beat the Heat. Maybe Memphis and San Antonio can give them a run, but Memphis and San Antonio probably can't beat OKC. So that's a bad situation in the West.
I think that the Heat, I mean, OKC has a chance if your man just plays out of his mind and your man being this guy.
Right.
All
right,
John, get us out of here, Jim.
That's right. Thanks for joining us in the war room today, folks. Shout out to everybody from the chat room, Facebook, Twitter, the calls they called and the rap to us. Thanks for our guest, Spike Eskin of CBS Philly, and Khalid Salam of the Shadow League for joining us as well. Tune in same time, same place next week. We'll be talking with super agent Lee Steinberg, who was the inspiration behind the movie Jerry Maguire. He will be in the war room to talk about his career. And what he deems to be the death of the NFL. That's right. He called it the death of the NFL. Until then, enjoy your sports week. Be sure to catch our conversations on Facebook, Twitter. Go to WarroomSportsTV.com to watch our videos. Until next time, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. I see you chumps on top.
Know the blueprint.
Yo.
Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, Beat Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarroomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's knocked out.
Call it
323-14-0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, the tough push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode.
Woo!
2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.